Welcome to the Daily Canon Podcast.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to this edition of the Daily Canon Weekly Podcast. Stephen Bradley sitting in for Matthew Wade because, well, positivity is a thing that can only be brought by me, let's be fair. And I can't believe I said that with a straight face. But it's one of those situations where even I can't deny that now Arsenal are in a title race. You know, and to join me to wax lyrical about, frankly, just how good Arsenal have been over the last month is our optimist in chief, Paul Williams. Paul, how are you, sir?
Yeah, very well. Very well. And thank you for that effusive introduction. It's been, wow, where to start? But I think I would start with, if somebody had said to you when we were lining up at home to West Ham on Boxing Day night that we would be talking however many games it is later and Arsenal would have been undefeated since the break, that they would play Newcastle at home, Tottenham away, and Manchester United at home and come out of those games with 7 points, that would have been, I think, even with as good as Arsenal have been this season, I think most people would have snapped your hand off for that point all, quite frankly. And I think that the last two performances in particular, we don't want to mention the C word, but I think that the two performances have been the performances of a team that can win the Premier League.
Yeah, but that's the thing. I think it has to be recognised at this point where you keep looking at the league table, and we keep saying, yeah, okay, it's fine. Arsenal have got, you know, 5 points clear on City with a game in hand, and we all know the game in hand is City away, and we can all talk ourselves into, well, those two games are lost. But then you look at it and you go, well, hang on a minute, like, City have lost more. Obviously, City have lost more games than us. They haven't played as well as us for most of the season. They're still struggling somewhat to get Haaland involved in the team when Kevin De Bruyne is not playing. If Kevin De Bruyne and Haaland are playing, they're almost unstoppable. But if either one of them isn't playing, then they're as far from, you know, invincible as they have been in maybe 5 years. And there's no one else. There's no one else. Arsenal are 11 points clear of third with a game in hand. So, like, it's not that we're in a title race. It's that nobody else is. You know, like, it's just one of those situations where you look around and go, yeah, Arsenal played really well. Arsenal are matching the standards of City and Liverpool over the last 5 years. And is anyone else? No. No, they're not.
Yeah, I think more than that, the thing for me is, as I said a second ago, when you look at how we played at Tottenham last week, and I was quite nervous before the game, so I didn't bother getting into any of the build-up, except for the fact that I happened to turn over just as Paul Merson was in the process of saying, oh, Arsenal going to run riot.
Yeah.
And he said something like, when I look at that team, I can't see it. I can't see anything other than Arsenal absolutely dominating this game. And Jamie Redknapp said, what do you mean, Merce? What do you mean? Because he got very upset about Tottenham being shit on by Paul Merson.
Yes.
And I heard Merce say that, and I looked at the Spurs team. I just thought, yeah, we're going to have these today. And not only did we have them, we absolutely killed them.
Yeah. First half especially.
Yeah, I mean, second half, yeah, Matthew and I had a conversation. I remember a game against Tottenham about 3 years ago where they were 2-0 up at halftime, and we had all of the second half without ever looking like we were going to score. And I think it was a very similar thing. I feel that Arsenal were at a level now where, had Tottenham scored, we may well have simply gone up the other end and just put another one in the back of their net for good measure. But so we're looking at an Arsenal team, and I was just talking to a friend about this, actually. The last two games, they've put a very confused-looking defender, opposition defender, in front of the Sky Sports camera 5 minutes after the game's finished. Yesterday, it was Luke Shaw.
Yeah.
He was absolutely, like, the poor fucker's been given an absolute torrid time by Bukayo Saka yesterday. twisted blood, twisted bones, probably didn't even know where he was in the country.
He's still spinning. He's still spinning now. He's reverse spinning.
And he has to put into words what this Arsenal team have just done to Manchester United. And it was the same last week. Eric Dier, who was completely delusional, actually, in his analysis of the game. And I think that what it speaks to me, and there was a hint of this actually in the studio on Sky yesterday, is people are now waking up actually to how good this Arsenal side is. Doesn't mean we're going to win the title. I haven't come here to say that I think we will win the title this season. I think we've got an unbelievable opportunity in front of us. But we all know that Manchester City are very capable of rattling off 10 wins, 30 points, and see you later. But this Arsenal side is really good. Really good.
Yeah. And that's the kicker. I think we don't have enough proof yet to say that Arsenal will win the league, just because it's still too early. It's still too young, a youngest team. You know, and apart from Zinchenko and Jesus, there is no, you know, pedigree of winning in this side. It's just the way it is. Apart from maybe Thomas Partey won one league at Atletico Madrid, but that's it. You know, it's such a young side that we don't know how they're going to cope if they're 10 points clear in March. We don't. You know, the Arsenal side in 2003 threw away an 11-point lead in March. And we all thought, maybe 2002 was a fluke. And then that team in 2003 went into 2004 and decided not to lose at all. Like, it showed growth. And this side is just showing growth upon growth upon growth. Like, even, like, the difference between yesterday's game and the game against Liverpool a couple of months ago, where Liverpool got it to 2-2 and you were like, uh-oh, yeah, they're starting to rattle through the gears here now. And then Arsenal got a rather fortunate penalty, got it to 3-2, and then sat back for 20 minutes and kept Liverpool at bay and won the game. Yesterday, United got a lucky goal, 2-2, and Arsenal were almost offended. They're like, you bastard.
Yeah.
You bastard. And spent the next 30 minutes on the United 18-yard box line. You know, everyone was up. It was like, they took it almost as a personal affront and went, why did you try to score again? We made it 2-1. Game's over. You're back in your box. And this team just had that sense of authority about itself. That sense of, no, we're better than you, and we're going to prove it. That sense of arrogant confidence, that irrational confidence that comes with winning 5, 6, 8, 10 games in a row. And then against the United side that are decent, against, you know, individual defenders who are really good. But like you said, Luke Shaw was made look like a spinning pinata yesterday. You know, Raphael Varane had no idea whether to go 5 yards left or 5 yards right to help his fullbacks, because both his fullbacks were getting torn apart. And then because of that, McTominay was asked, you mark Odegaard. Fine, no bother, he did okay. But then Eriksen was told, right, you mark Xhaka and Zinchenko. Both of them, by yourself. Lol. You know, and so and it just, Arsenal always had an overlap. They always had a man extra. They always had an extra pass. So when United did press in and go, right, Odegaard's not getting the ball, Bob just knocked to Xhaka, out to Martinelli. And then the United defenders go, right, go over to cover Martinelli. And United defenders go, we're not leaving Saka one-on-one with Luke Shaw, are you mad? No way. And that's how they broke them down. And look, it took until the 92nd minute, but it wasn't a shock that it came.
That goal had been in the post for quite some time. And on that note, before we forget to mention it, absolute massive shout out to Eddie Nketiah, because I think when Gabriel Jesus got injured during the World Cup, there were a lot of Arsenal fans panicking and a lot of Arsenal fans who felt that Nketiah wasn't good. He might have been good enough to carry us in the fight for a top four place last season, but to be spearheading the title challenge, we needed something else. And I didn't believe that. I genuinely felt Eddie showed enough last season to show that he is good enough to play for Arsenal Football Club at whatever level we're playing at. Nketiah is good enough. And he's shown it game after game after game. in this period since Christmas, and I appreciate it's quite a small sample size.
No, no, but you're right. He runs his bollocks off. Pure and simple, the finishes
he's been compared to, I think Paul Scholes compared him to Ian Wright, and it's a weird thing when both you and I are old enough to remember Ian Wright and what a pure goal scorer, but also a really skillful footballer. This isn't a Ruud van Nistelrooy that we're talking about. And I think Eddie lacks a little bit of individual skill in the sense I'm talking about Ian Wright being skillful. But what he does have is his range of finishing and ability to just get the ball in the net. Yeah. However you're going to do it, get it in the net. Yeah. And that... what a magic moment in front of the North Bank. It was just so good. Yeah. I'm so pleased for him because I just felt it was the wrong thing. I actually had an argument with a stand-up comedian, or not an argument, a debate on Twitter with Jacob Hawley, who felt that Eddie hadn't really shown enough in his sub appearances this season to be given the shirt. And I do understand that on one level, but I think it's different when you're playing... When you're playing with Saka and Odegaard and Martinelli, your job is going to be easier than when you're not.
That's the key. You've hit it on the nail. You hit the nail on the head there. Like, he has improved. Like I said, his ability to his off the ball movement, like when it defensively, is so much better than it was last year. Like, he has definitely added to his game. His ability just to be an annoyance for a centre back that he didn't have last year, where if Arsenal didn't have the ball, the centre-back didn't have to worry about Nketiah. Now he does, because Nketiah's just hounding you, the same way Jesus does. And yes, he'll never be the skillful player Jesus is, but Christ, Jesus could learn from Nketiah's ability just to be in that right place at the right time and get a toenail or the outside of an ankle on a ball 6 yards out and scoop a ball in. You know, like those are the goals that strikers love. Those ones where the fullback knows where you are until you actually stand in front of him going, you no clue where I am, mate. You know, for the first goal.
And that's the thing, isn't it? It's like that is actually, you either have that or you don't.
Yeah.
The ability to know where a ball's going to drop or where it's not going to drop. The ability to realise that a ball might drop off, bounce off a centre-back a certain way. I remember Ian Wright talking about it years ago. Like, he didn't know what made him go forward or what made him go back.
He just went.
An instinctive...
And you can't, like I said, you can't teach that. You can't. And
you can teach someone to finish, you know. Thierry Henry learned how to finish in his time at Arsenal, didn't he? But you can't teach someone to be in the right place at the right time. They've either got it or they haven't. And Eddie has got it, man.
Yeah.
I'm really excited for him.
But the biggest plus is, and I feel so bad for Kieran Tierney, because he's finally fit. He's finally healthy. And he's a fantastic footballer, right? He is, 2 years ago, he was the prototype fullback. He runs his backside off, great crossing of the ball, great left foot on him, can stick a tackle in, can play, three in the back as a left centre back as he does for Scotland. And it's like, that. They're the kind of players you build a side route. It's how, in a way, they won the FA Cup, where he was able to play left centre back and almost left wing at times. And now he's not within an hour's roar of playing left back for Arsenal. And it's got nothing to do. He hasn't had a drop in form. Like I said, he's got his fitness back. But Arsenal cannot play the way they play against United, against Tottenham, against Chelsea without Zinchenko playing left back. They just can't. And it's a testament to how Arteta went to Man City and saw how effective Zinchenko was when they used him as an attacking fullback, because they would only do it so often. You know, they would usually play Benjamin Mendy, then João Cancelo, then, they spent hundreds of millions of pounds on left-backs and right-backs. And Zinchenko is still an attacking midfielder for Ukraine, comes through the youth system as a midfielder, and Pep was like, no, you're going to be my Kimmich. You're going to be my Philip Lamb. You're going to be my midfielder that plays at fullback. And he's an Arsenal fan. And Arteta goes to Pep and goes, look, give us the Arsenal fan. We could do with him. Yo, as if we'll play him every week. You can't promise him that. You won't play him every week. Let him go to play for his boyhood club. And the difference between Arsenal playing with Zinchenko and playing without Zinchenko is chalk and cheese. And yesterday was a perfect example of that.
Yeah, magnificent yesterday, wasn't he? Absolutely magnificent. It's interesting. I've got a friend that I've mentioned on this pod a few times, not always positively, Harry, who quite regularly this season has been saying, oh, I have Tierney over Zinchenko at left back every day of the week. And he actually said it about 2 weeks ago. And I just said to him, look, mate, you're just going to have to understand Arteta sees it very differently. And Tierney can't do what Zinchenko does in terms of our build-up. We're not playing with an attacking, purely boots on chalk attacking fullback anymore. We've got someone that's, you know, he plays centre. And Kieran Tierney, God bless him.
He's got chalk in his boots. It's from the centre circle.
You know, Tierney's many things, and I love him. I've got a print of my favourite ever Arsenal 11, and Kieran Tierney is my left back. Yeah. Maybe we couldn't put Ashley in it, obviously. But, you know, like you said, in 2 years, he's gone from being probably our next captain to, well, we'll probably have to sell him in the summer because there isn't, as good as he is, he completely will change the way we play when he is in the team.
Yeah, and it's just one of the situations where, like I said, he can't be faulted for it. But like, Zinchenko is crucial to being that extra midfielder, that extra option for possession that keeps the ball moving as quickly as Arsenal need to keep it moving for their this way of their playing to work. You know, they are Manchester City on steroids. You know, it is with the volume turned up to 11, and you know, two times speed, whichever speed you listen to podcasts on. That's what Arsenal are. They are City, but Liverpool trying to play like City. You know, it's like half Klopp, half Guardiola, where you've got Guardiola's way of thinking with Klopp's way of thinking, getting up there now. And it's a combination of the two, and they're not as good at Liverpool as pressing because nobody might ever be. They're not as good at passing the ball as City are because nobody ever might be when they've got six centre midfielders playing up front. But if they're almost as good as City, and they're almost as good as Liverpool, and they're doing it at the same time, then you get passages of play like the last 20 minutes against Manchester United, where a team as good as Manchester United, a team as informed as Manchester United, cannot get the ball. Never mind creating a chance or getting a corner, but they can't get the ball. Like, you know, they were getting pressed into their own 6-yard box, never mind their own half. And David De Gea was just constantly acting like Johnny Sexton for Ireland, but he's getting the ball and kicking it into touch. It was like, just get rid of it. I don't go, get out. And
what did you think of the game at halftime? Because I felt I'd watched a really frenetic half of football that felt really tense to me. And I also felt that Arsenal actually hadn't played very well.
Yeah.
A friend of mine who I was talking to at the time, a QPR fan, said to me, you're being mad. Arsenal are well on top of this game.
Yeah. And that's the thing. Like, we're so used to picking out the mistakes. And it's why I said in the video today, like, the Arsenal fan would look at this game as almost even because they see United as a rival. They see United going up the field and scoring twice and calling it equal to what Arsenal were doing. But United had 6 shots in the whole game in 90 minutes. You know, Arsenal had 31.
Yeah.
You know, like, Arsenal had 63 touches in Manchester United's box. That's the most of any team in any game in the Premier League this season.
Yeah.
They throttled them. Like, it's just a case of the result ended up 3-2, and you're like, oh, well, it must have been close. Just like the stats, like, it was almost like a reverse of what happened with Tottenham, where the stats were completely equal, and yet it was a 2-0 hammering. You know, it was 2-0 after half an hour. That was it. It was game over. Tottenham never came close. And it's, like I said, you just get a different, like I said, there's no stat to describe how confident you are in this Arsenal team, but it's the first time I've seen an Arsenal team since, like I said, that invincible side, that 2002, 2003, 2004 side, where it was 1-1, but you just knew they were going to get a second. You just knew. You didn't know where. You just knew. Yeah, and you could tell when it was coming. You could tell when pressure was building. You could tell where Arsenal put their foot on the gas. And this team knows that now. Like I say, it happened against West Ham when they went 1-0 down and they didn't panic. Didn't start just lobbing long balls into the box. They said, oh, they've scored. Okay. Well, we were battering them before this anyway. Let's batter them some more. We'll end up getting three anyway. And they did. You know, Tottenham, if we play like this for half an hour, we'll get two or three. They're not trying to attack us. We might as well take advantage of this. They got two. That was the end of it. This felt the same. But when United scored two, when it went to 2-2, at no stage did I think United were going to get a winner. You know, it was either going to be 2-2 or at least 3-2. And it's a long, long, long time since I've thought that about an Arsenal side.
I know, we've talked.
Yeah, you know, I am Mr. Pessimism on this website, and I get that, but I was never, even with Arsenal having, you know, all of their players inside United, within 30 yards of United box, they had one counter-attack, and Partey just sprinted 30 yards and swept up Rashford, got the ball, and immediately turned around and pinged a 40-yard ball to Rashford, and we were in again. It's like, this team isn't stopping. This team isn't taking a rest. It's not going. This team is, like I said, it is pedal on the metal. This is club football that they're playing right now, where they're getting the ball to their most dangerous players, and the most dangerous players are acting as if they have freedom. And it's scary. And when Liverpool were doing that, when Mo Salah was doing this, the end of his first season and the start of his second season, it was scary because he would get the ball on the right wing, and you start to think to yourself, this guy could do anything from here. And we might just be seeing that happening with Saka. Because when he scored his goal, Luke Shaw had no idea what to do with him. No. He went tight. He knew he couldn't go tight, couldn't go touch tight because he was too afraid of Saka going around him. Because Saka has enough of a right foot of a threat that he could put in a good ball with his right foot. And he knew if he let him cut inside with his left, he was screwed. So he stood back. And what did Saka do? He looked up his Arjen Robben collection and he went, okay, yeah. What am I gonna do here? But that's what's been missing from Saka's game. It was his one, not flaw, but it was his one, like I said, it was the one tick that he needed to do. Whereas, like, if he is 25 yards out, he can put one in the top corner like Salah can, like Robben can, like that elite, elite, elite left winger, right winger, cutting in on his left foot. And if he can do that, like he did it, he hit the post about 5 minutes later with the second one. You know, like if he can add that to his game, then the sky's the limit. Because then it's like how you can't defend him. Then you've got to do the Robin rules on it. You've got to double team him. You've got to put two guys on him. You've got to show him out wide all the time. And if you do that, suddenly Martinelli's free on the left. You know, so it's just so nice to watch his team and analyze his team and realize just how much there is for this team to grow. And then you go, right, well, you know, maybe in a year or two, they might be in a challenge to win. Oh, no, they're 5 points clear of the game in hand.
Yeah, and the thing for me is everyone's like, oh, they've still got to play Man City twice. Well, Man City have got to play us.
But yes.
You know, I at the moment would back Arsenal at home against anyone. And actually, yes. Even away from home, there was a good piece in The Athletic last week about how Arsenal were that good that they look at home even when they're away. You know, the heat of a North London derby. No bother. We've got
exactly
it.
The same.
And Saka, I'd just like... That goal yesterday. I thought Thierry Henry was interesting. He was, I think it was after the West Ham game. And he talked about Saka understanding that he has to be a killer now when he goes on over the, you know, he's a lovely kid. Everyone says it, Bukayo Saka, lovely kid.
Yeah.
You know, I'll mention again, I'm from the same part of the world as Mr. Saka. So my favourite person from Ealing. That includes my nan, by the way.
Sorry, Mrs. Williams.
Gil. But just he can just decide games. He's got it in front of him now. He can make the difference. And, you know, one of the things I felt in the summer with the signing of Jesus and also the fact that Nketiah was starting games up front was now we've got a centre forward that centre backs have to worry about. So you can say you're going to go and double team Bukayo Saka.
Good
but if you do that, you're freeing space up in the middle. And when we had Lacazette, I think defences were quite happy to do that, particularly in the last 18 months. It's a different Arsenal now. And the other thing, of course, we shouldn't forget to mention is, thank fuck Arsenal went out and spent some money in the week and brought on someone that could just give them an extra little push, because Trossard's little cameo there was
very nice. Looked like he fits in quite nicely, where it's like he was able to get up to the pace of the game very quickly. Where he was like Arsenal would play those quick little balls in front of the United penalty area, and he was like, yeah, I'll take this on either foot, and realize that he's playing the Martinelli role, get it to Xhaka, make a dummy run so that Zinchenko's free. You know, clever little things like that that usually take a player 3-6 months to pick up on, just through, you know, new job, new workplace, new people. You know, it always takes time to build connections. He looked like he fit in like a glove. So, and then with the City argument, like we all know that City can go on a run. I keep looking at City's fixture list over the next 2 months. And I'm thinking, where's this run going to start? Because their next game, Friday night, is City versus Arsenal in a game I think not one Arsenal fan gives a flying fiddler's about in the FA Cup.
Oh, I would like us to go there. We lose, but don't do what we did when we played Manchester United in
the FA Cup. No, don't throw it away.
2008, like, and lose 4-0. Don't do that.
Don't do that.
But
write that game off, right? That's because it's the FA Cup, blah, 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 blah. Like, the guy said, if Arsenal win that, people would say, oh, league's over. And I'm telling you right now, no. But City's next game after that, Tottenham away in the league, followed by Villa at home, followed 3 days later by us away. They come to us first. We don't go to them until the end of April.
I've made that observation to my friend James.
Then they've got Forest 3 days after playing Arsenal, which Forest are, no, they're not war beaters, but they're not awful either. Leipzig away in the Champions League. Bournemouth away, that's 3 points. Newcastle at home. Palace away. West Ham at home. Liverpool at home. Where is this 10 game winning run coming? Look, Arsenal's run is, you know, not exactly a walk in the park either, but Arsenal's is, like I said, we've got City in the Cup Friday night. Everton just sacked their manager. Who's Everton's first game? Us.
Yeah.
You know? Then we've got Brentford at home, City at home, Villa away, Leicester away, Bournemouth at home, Fulham away, Palace at home, Leeds at home, and now I'm into April.
If Arsenal are now,
Gabriel Jesus is back by then.
I know. Oh God!
This might actually be like, again, I don't think Arsenal are going to win the league, but every piece of analytics, every piece of fixture list I look at, every team makes me think that Arsenal will still be 6-8 points clear by the time they get to City versus Arsenal on the 26th of April. And then after that, they have 5 games left. Home to Chelsea, away to Newcastle. There are 2 tricky games. Brighton at home, Forest away, Wolves at home.
Yeah. Yeah.
It might be on, Paul.
It's definitely on. I don't think you can sit here after 50 points in 19 games and say it's not on. The question is whether we won't know.
Liverpool did 3 years ago. They got 55 positive.
Well, that's exactly why. But it is on. It's 100% on. I think the exciting thing is really. Well, the exciting thing is the team, but the really exciting thing is when you go to the stadium, and I don't know when the last time you got yourself to a game was.
Too long.
The fans are just completely... No,
you can tell, even just on screen, off screen, you can tell that it has changed from a group of people who are there waiting for it to go tits up, and it's turned into a group of people that are waiting to be given a chance to back their team. That are like, no, we want to succeed, but we're going to try and help you as much as we can. You know, we're not settling for second best. We're not, you know, we are here to support you. And we're going to do it as loudly and as fervently as we can. And it's refreshing, frankly. I've said this before on Irish radio, where it's like, you used to listen to an Arsenal game and you could hear the crowd going, ah, you know, when the opposition had the ball. You don't now. You know, opposition had the ball. We're just sitting, right? They're not going to do anything. We'll get it back in a minute. It'll be fine.
Yeah. Yeah, it's funny. I mentioned earlier, I was at the Newcastle game and we were literally right next. I took my cousin Josh for his birthday and we were right next to the Newcastle fans and there was about 5 minutes left. And they were all looking over at us and rubbing their eyes like, oh, isn't it sad you're not winning? It's like, lads, we're top of the league.
Yeah.
You know, you can enjoy your Pyrrhic 0-0 at Arsenal, which they celebrate. You know, talk about teams celebrating like they'd won the World Cup. Newcastle celebrated like they'd won the World Cup.
51 minutes of football they paid. They 300 Pope, miles absolutely. To go there.
Like the referee that night was a disgrace, but let's not get into that. The fans at the Emirates are making this season. Everyone's along for the ride wherever it takes us, and I think one thing that definitely came out of Spurs' capitulation in Manchester last week, and it's very much like second, third prize for us now. Champions League is like we don't even have to worry about it, you know.
Yeah. Only 17 points clear of Tottenham with a game in hand,
which is just insane. And I think what I was trying to get to, and I kept forgetting, was there was a scenario at the start of this month where we could very easily have been in second behind Manchester City by the end of it.
Yeah,
you know, it wouldn't have taken a lot for that to happen. And what's actually happened is we've extended the lead only a little bit, but we have extended it, and it's just such exciting times.
Fantastic. We were rapid there. Listen, Paul Williams, thanks for joining us as always. Any last thoughts before we try and jinx this into a 6-2 loss at City on Friday night?
Well, you know, new manager bounce at Everton in a fortnight. Who knows? But I think the great thing as an Arsenal fan, I remember my friend Kev saying to me about late 2004, it must be really boring being an Arsenal fan. You just know you're going to win every week. We're not far off that at the moment. Long may it continue, because if it does, Manchester City, as you said, if their 10-game run does come, it might be too late for them. Why am I saying all this on a podcast?
I'm editing this now because if I don't want to speak, because if I speak, then I'll end up saying something that'll be recorded and played and made. No, screw that. We'll talk to you next week. Listen, good luck.